Affinities between jokes and poems go beyond their structural patterns to the very fabric, like rivalrous siblings recombining the same DNA. Poems and jokes handle words in similar ways and often to similar ends. Both sift experience and convey it to an audience through techniques of wordplay and compression. In his characteristically exorbitant foreword to his collection, Is Five, from 1926, E. E. Cummings offers as a theory of poetic technique the, quote, eternal question and immortal answer of burlesque, videlicet. Would you hit a woman with a child? No, I'd hit her with a brick. This rhetorical pratfall captures what Cummings prized as, quote, the precision which creates movement. This precise mechanics of expression, admired by Cummings, is the poet's bread and butter. As the philosopher Henri Bergson suggests in his essay Laughter from 1900, it's also the primary business of humor. Quote, the comic is something mechanical encrusted upon the living. In poetry, we have the mechanism of the poem clicking shut at the end, as Yeats hoped it might. This is different from the poem as container, since the image describes an action, the crispness of the closing, and suggests how well the poem works, not how well it contains. In his book, How to Be Funny, Discovering the Comic in You, co-written with Jane Woolman, Steve Allen considers the mechanics of joke telling. Almost every verbal element he considers has a corollary in poetry. Here are a handful. 1. The play on words. Wordplay is common in jokes and poetry as pigeons in a park. Wit, both capital W and small w, music and surprising twists of sense are essential to both vaudeville zingers and heartsick verses. Wordplay abides in repetition, alliteration, and notoriously in puns. As an example of this last, Allen offers, question, do you know how many drunks there are in the United States? Answer, the statistics are staggering. Puns can be silly, but they can also be searing, as in the tiny poem Their Sex Life, a two-liner from the really short poems of A.R. Ammons from 1990. A romantic couple's relations are described simply as one failure on top of another. The wit, as the poet David Lehman points out, is in the lining, the way the first line is on top of the second. Puns get a bad rap. Stephen Leacock, in Humor and Humanity, an Introduction to the Study of Humor from 1938, dismisses them with a scowl. Puns act like insidious weeds, quote, denounced and execrated for refusing to die. Leacock then denounces them in Latin, expellis furco tamen usque recreat, a bit of Horace that he misspells. In other words, you may drive puns out with a pitchfork, but they keep coming back. Leacock defines a pun as the use of a word or phrase which has two meanings that the context brings into glaring incongruity. Professor Edward Taylor of Columbia University, on the other hand, has commended the pun for its unique ability to call into meaningful relation different lexical galaxies, as in Herrick's Upon Julia's Breasts. Display thy breasts, my Julia, there let me behold that circummortal purity, between whose glories there my lips I'll lay, ravished in that fair Via Lactiae. Another defender of the pun, the poet Thomas Hood, a noted 19th century practitioner, some would say perpetrator of puns, wrote, quote, however critics may take offense, a double meaning has double sense. Many of Hood's own puns, it should be noted, fall short of this lofty standard. Leacock calls Hood the blackest spot in a darkened sky of Victorian punning. A couple of examples give the basic sense. He went and told the sexton, and the sexton told the bell, and a cannonball took off his legs, so he laid down his arms. Groan. Well, yes, exactly. What makes a bad joke is often what makes a bad poem. The formal convention is dutifully followed, Without sufficient innovation or surprise, the received form is not enough.